calling Dorothy Jane with T-System South. I'm so sorry that I missed your call, but if you'd leave your name and number, I would love to call you back just as soon as I can. Thank you again for calling, and I'll talk to you soon.
Greetings. This is the automatically deleted husband, automatically deleted again. First thing to note, there's several things, and this will be on video. Right now, I have a little bit of rain on my window because we had maybe 30 minutes of rain. Apparently, this is the first bit of the hurricane has finally hit us here in Tennessee. Getting a little bit of rain. It's supposed to be a pretty good downpour tomorrow. Downpour in the sense of a bit over an inch, which is, you know, that's a good rain. It's not like what happened on the coast. But anyway, so I'm getting a taste of it now. But the other thing that happened today is because of the fact that there's a hurricane tomorrow, I don't think I'll be going to the farmer's market. I'm just guessing. There's the possibility the weather report says that it may be reasonable, but it should be still rainy. But so I went today. And one of the things I did today is I went to Publix to get, you know, the normal things that a man needs, organic bananas and of course, cheese. But then I stopped a couple of the places, and one of the places was the chin-up bar. But something different. This time I took a camera. And what you can see from the video of that glorious moment is, see, I can't do the dead lift, you know, just grab the bar and lift myself up. But what I have been able to do is hold myself up. And so now I have evidence. There's the video evidence that I have officially, you know, when you're doing this, when you're in the process of it, the arms are just holding you up, and you know the chin is above the bar, and you know it's kind of like, this is hard. My goal was 10 seconds, so I try to slowly count in my head, and it was kind of like, okay, 9, 10, 11. I got to 12 because I figured, okay, I'm probably counting fast, because it's, you know, time flies when you're holding yourself up on a bar. And it was actually, you know, once I got the video and looked at it, it was only 9 seconds. But still, the important thing to me is, you know, as I write on the note on the website, is as a kid, I couldn't do that. I still have the problem where I can't pull myself up from a dead stop, or, you know, just on the ground, just arms only. But I've got to the point now where I have, on occasion, have done three, I may have done four or five, I don't remember now, where, from the ground with a little bit of a jump, get my chin over the bar. And that has encouraged me, because when I first tried this, you know, I was getting up to maybe my eyes, maybe my nose and whatnot. But now I'm getting my chin literally over the bar. So that encourages me. And I do believe that it's mostly attributed to the fact that I do the jumping jacks, because the jumping jacks have strengthened my arms. So anyway, that's the light stuff to give you some encouragement. But one other semi-light thing, one of the things I do think about a lot is, because I don't watch movies anymore at all. But I do watch things that you might call documentaries. I do see a lot of news. I do see some a good bit of theology things. And one of the things I watched was a documentary done. It was only like 30 minutes, I think, it was done by RT. They actually have... They produce some pretty interesting documentaries, because they've gone to some areas. The one that I found, there were several, but one they do a lot of things that would be hard to find being made in the U.S. One was titled "I Want My Sex Back." I've mentioned this one before, because it is about people in the U.S. who did the transition, you know, the alleged transition from one gender to another, and then said, no, I was wrong. I want to go back. And there is a growing number of those people. Those people are quite easy to find. But they did a documentary on that. And of course, in the U.S., you know, that's probably illegal. You know, same thing in Canada and the U.K. If you did something like that, you'd probably find yourself in jail. But RT did it. But they also did one, because obviously it's very close to them, called The Fall of the USSR, which I found extremely fascinating because it was a reminder and it filled in some holes. The aspect of the reminder that I think is important is one of the things they showed is that period of time when Gorbachev was ushered away and he was taken into captivity. It was a moment of tension. When that occurred, shortly after it happened, I went to Czechoslovakia. So I actually spent a couple days, whatever it was, in Czechoslovakia while Gorbachev was in prison. So this is just before the fall of the Soviet Union, which is kind of like, this is an interesting moment because I remember talking with the people there and they felt the tension. Because, you know, shortly thereafterwards, the Soviet Union fell. And one thing I want to remind you of, my eldest daughter, Erica Lee, spent some time in the Soviet Union in Czechoslovakia, 1991. So she was there, you know, with my wife when we took the trip to Europe. The first place, you know, we fly to Europe. Did we spend the night? No, I don't think we spent the night in Vienna. We did on the way out. No, we spent the night in Frankfurt on the way. Anyway, we arrived in Vienna, got in a car, and drove to Czechoslovakia. Spent the first night in a hotel. So, you know, it's fascinating to arrive in Vienna, which has a city with a reputation, a good bit of opulence and so forth. And then we leave and we spend the night in what was a pretty nice hotel in Czechoslovakia at the time. You know, not the top level stuff, but still a nice, because we were in a small city, modest sized city. But anyway, so the point of this is I watched that documentary and it was insightful. It was a reminder of things. And I wonder, because I remember as a kid how much I enjoyed watching films, literal films, when we were in school, elementary school, junior high, not much in high school, but films. And to learn about things, whether they're about science, history, events going around the world, whatnot, I found that most fascinating. I've mentioned before, I took a class that was called Humanities. What they did is it was an English class and history class, and one happened just before lunch, one happened just after lunch. The whole point of choosing those time slots is so that very often we would, at the beginning of one class, get in a bus or in a bunch of cars, head somewhere, and do something for 2 hours because we had the time, because we had the lunchtime period also. It was probably one of the best classes I ever had in high school. No, I think it is the best class because we did things that exposed us to other things. We went to various places. Here we are, and you know, I was in a public high school. We went often to various. We went to some various Christian organizations. We went to a Jewish synagogue. We went to. We had a some other loony ones. Cultish people show up and even give presentations to our class because there wasn't that barrier. The objective was to expose. And I found that delightful. We showed up often at the local university, University of California at Santa Barbara, and was able to expose herself, you know, because the one that sinks in so much is we listened to a gentleman who was a poet. And I've never really been into poetry, but the way he read poetry, it was beautiful. And so being exposed like that, I found delightful. So apply that to what I believe I should have done as the dad, especially as a homeschool family, is spent way too much time watching entertainment movies. Like the Fall of the USSR video, those are the things that we should have watched. And then not just watch it, but engage each other on it. Ask questions. Let's see, does this interest us? Does this not? And what have we learned? And also, is what they told us true? To be able to critically examine what is said, and then, of course, relate this to other things. That is a failing on my part. And I don't know what to do about it at this stage. But important thing. Obviously, you're familiar with, well, I assume you're familiar with the fact that the United States government invaded Afghanistan about 20 years ago. Be clear on this. It was an invasion. The excuse was to get Osama bin Laden. That's the public excuse. That's not the reality. Never was the reality. We're there for opium. That is the fundamental reason. We're there for opium. Because if you remember during the Vietnam era, most of the opium was coming from places like Cambodia. It was coming through the U.S. military was bringing it back into the United States. Because, again, the biggest drug dealer in the world is the CIA. And often, a lot of these drugs were put into body bags and sent back to the United States. I mean, this you can easily find this information out. But what happened in Cambodia and whatnot, and we had some issues there. So it was moved to Afghanistan. And what is one of the best ways to protect the poppy fields and so forth? The U.S. military. But how do you protect the poppy fields? Well, you're at war with the country, so we go there and we protect the poppy fields. And you have, you know, it was, I think I pointed out recently, Geraldo Rivera, who was, you know, a big-name reporter, went there and interviewed soldiers guarding the poppy fields. I mean, so this is what we did. But we use the excuse of Osama bin Laden. But remember, on September 10th, 2001, the day before the attack, he was in a hospital in Pakistan. This is very known. And in December of that year, according to a paper in Pakistan, he died. And that's why when you look at the videos that were allegedly produced by him later, didn't look like him. Sometimes he even started to look younger. And I think one or more were the CIA actually confessed, yes, this is staged. We did this. This was not bin Laden. But then we had this SEAL Team 6, the raid in Pakistan, to actually capture him, kill him, and get rid of the body. And then, for some odd reason, all the members of the SEAL Team 6 died in a helicopter crash. Well, who would have expected that? So when you play this kind of high-stakes games, the cost of a few lives don't matter, even when they're American soldiers. And, you know, the dumping his body into the ocean as if it's, you know, meeting with Islamic principles, that's complete bogus. I mean, that was stupid, and they got away with it. So people continue to say that he died during the Obama administration, as opposed to more likely he died in 2001. Because he was on dialysis. He had health problems. And the other thing to point out is, where did he get a lot of his money? Directly from the CIA. He was But anyway, the whole point of all this is it's fraud. The whole thing is fraud. Where did the Taliban get its support? The Taliban, the Mujahideen, and so forth. Where did they get their support? U.S. government. Because remember, the Soviet Union was in Afghanistan. And of course, well, we can cause them some hassles, cause them trouble by supporting the Mujahideen at the time. And we did. And so now we have conversations now about, well, the Taliban has taken over the country. And of course, where did they get all their money and all their military equipment? It's because we've left billions of dollars of equipment, helicopters, airplanes, lots of rifles and gun, a whole lot of ammunition. We simply left it for them. And they have it all. That's why you can see the videos of all the Humvees and things of that nature driving around the streets of Kabul, and with the Taliban flag on them. They were bought and paid for by the U.S. taxpayer, delivered to Afghanistan for the Taliban to use. And it's not that they captured them. No, we handed it to them. So you see those things happening. And, you know, so the question is, there's a lot of questions of why. And what would be the attitude of a follower of Christ? One of the things that I think, and I've heard several point this out, there was allegedly a bomb blast at or near the airport in Kabul that killed 13 U.S. soldiers and almost 200 Afghans. The bodies of the U.S. soldiers were flown back to the United States, and they were met at the airport by President Biden. All sorts of mourning and whatnot. What brave soldiers, and what a tremendous sacrifice, all these kind of things. And some people have pointed out, several have pointed out, what about the innocent, they weren't a part of this, Afghans who died, almost 200. Why are they any different than the American soldiers? Because the American soldiers weren't the brave fighters standing for freedom and defending democracy, which is complete garbage. They were the invaders. The U.S. soldiers were the invaders. The people who died, the vast majority of these people, were effectively the innocent parties in this. Why are the U.S. soldiers somehow more valuable? There was one gentleman who I've gained a lot of respect for. He's a young guy, and I think he's going to go really far, or he's going to be silenced. His name is Richard Medhurst. I think one parent is Syrian, the other is British or something of that nature, because he speaks very good English and very good Arabic. He currently, he has his own, he's an independent journalist, but he also does programs on RT. So I think that's where he's surviving. He did a video that I will give you the link for. But one thing he said in a recent video: people in the West need to stop with this colonial mindset thinking they can just invade countries, kill people, and stay there for 20 years, and then act like they are the victims. And at the Kabul airport, you can see this American arrogance in its purest form when 60 Afghans, which again, the number is now almost 200, died. And yet people are asking you to pray for the Marines as if they're the only ones with souls. And he concludes with, "How Christian of you." That should be an extremely condemning statement. And he's right. He's absolutely right. You know, there's this minor idea. I know it's Old Testament. You know, it's way back in Genesis 1. These people are human beings created in the image of God. And to say because they're Afghans, they are somehow less significant than a U.S. Marine, that is arrogance. Richard Medhurst is right. That is arrogance. It is shameful. I've heard him and others state, because, well, he did also an excellent video because he put, I was not aware of, apparently there's a whole bunch of news organizations showing U.S. Marines especially with young children, Afghan kids, babies in their arms or handing out water bottles and things of that nature. And coming across as, look, the Marines are loving, they care. You look at the last 20 years, the U.S. Marines and the others kill on average 3 to 5 Afghan kids a day, every day, for 20 years. Now handing a young child a water bottle makes them noble, makes them glorious. Holding a baby in your arms and getting a photo opportunity because of it makes you worthy of a moment of silence by the president. After the blast, the U.S. did a drone strike in order to, as they report, target some ISIS members who were going to do another strike. So a drone fired a missile into the city and apparently may indeed have taken out two members of ISIS. And apparently it's coming out, so it is new information, but it also took out others, civilians. And it may be as many as 10 kids were killed in that drone attack. So this holding the water bottles and holding the kids and whatnot, we're still killing 3 to 5 kids a day. But the president is going to give a moment of silence for our dead Marines. And it should be a reminder, because I did the video, All Hail the Whistleblower, Daniel Hale, who I assume is now in prison. And he's the one who pointed out that our drone strikes in Afghanistan, about 90% of the targets are civilians. Nothing's changed, even in the last day or two. Nothing's changed. The UK apparently is out. Germany apparently is out, and they were criticized because one of the things they brought out was a whole bunch of beer. You know, it's kind of like plane full of beer leaving anyway. But the U.S. obviously the big player. And what are we leaving behind? There's another report that I saw again. This was from Al Jazeera. The thing, I've been watching a lot of Al Jazeera simply because of the fact they're there. Because a lot of the negotiation between the Taliban and the former government took place in Doha, which is where Al Jazeera is based out of. So they had, and of course, when the Taliban first got into the presidential palace, the news media that was there was Al Jazeera. I don't think anybody else was there. And the thing I think is to point out is the Taliban, in a lot of ways, has become very politically astute, because during that time, because I have the video, I watched it, they were very civil. you see a couple of the soldiers grab some of the flags, the former Afghan flags, and neatly took them off the poles within in that room, wrapped them up and set them aside, because now they're using the Taliban flags. But a whole lot of the stuff they're doing on social media and things like that, and it's fascinating. A lot of people say, well, they didn't use social media before, 20 years ago. And they say, well, because they didn't want it. Actually, 20 years ago, they didn't have it. Neither did we in the U.S. I mean, it's a stupid comment to say that they now became tech savvy. So did everybody else. It wasn't there at that time, 20 years ago. So this argument is just, I mean, the arguments that are used are really stupid. But what do we leave behind? We've gone in through drone strikes and other ways. And, you know, you can find a whole bunch of videos of U.S. soldiers just simply massacring people. So the PR puff pieces that they're doing right now, that doesn't reflect what we've done in Afghanistan for 20 years. You know, on that, I remember when I was doing some study on some of the things happening in Iraq, because there were several videos. One I saw, and I think I still have them, of, you know, it was, I think it was U.S., it may have been, was it, maybe even another country, but it may have been, I think it was U.S., snipers simply taking pot shots at people on the roofs of a building. Civilians just taking pot shots and scaring them. Or killing. I think they killed at least one. And there's another scene that became quite known where, because I don't know why this was videoed. Why would you video something like this? This is stupid. Where a U.S. vehicle was driving down the highway full of civilian vehicles. They popped the back window and just gunned down the cars behind them. Killed a whole bunch of people. That was cruel. It's random violence. That's the U.S. government for you. Because it destroys, being in the military destroys people. That's why we have so many U.S. soldiers committing suicide. I think the numbers are still over 10 a day. And I don't doubt there'll be a spike right now. And of course, you know, we have the things like the Abu Ghraib, you know, the torture center that the U.S. So did, and plus so many other things, and obviously collateral murder and whatnot. But in Afghanistan, what do we leave behind? A whole bunch of destroyed families. And a lot of times, it's orphans. And there was the one video from Al Jazeera that went to some of these places to see some of these orphans. And this one where they talk about the Eid celebration, which is, again, in Islam, there's a Sunni and a Shia. The Shia will, I think, I don't know if the Sunnis celebrate at all, but yeah, no, of course not. I don't think so. It's only the Shia that do that because anyway. But they talk about the celebration and the sadness because their dad is not with them. Because he was killed by the U.S. government. These are not Afghans, and therefore we can say they are somehow lesser creatures. These are human beings created in the image of God. They have a large number of them in that area who are Muslim. So what? They're human beings created in the image of God. One way to make sure they can never get to have a relationship with Christ is to put a bullet in their head. That's not love. What I'm seeing happening now is the U.S. PR campaign. We're the good people. We are being abused by the Taliban, by ISIS, and so forth. No, we're the abusers. We are the abusers. We should have been out of there before we ever went in. We should have never gone in there. What we did was wrong. You know, it is, because I pointed out in a video I did years ago, that if you look at the roughly 3,000 that died in 9/11, 2001, and you look at the things that happened afterwards in the various acts of violence, the number may have doubled. So take 6,000, take 10,000. And I, the analogy I gave was the incident at Auschwitz when, because it became famous and to whatever degree it's embellished, I don't know, about, what's the gentleman's name? Anyway, him, who, somebody escaped from Auschwitz. So the camp commandant said, okay, one person escaped, so I'm going to take 10 of you and kill you to discourage further. And the one gentleman who was picked to die shouted, meine Frau, meine Kinder. My wife, my kids. Those words have echoed in my mind because I watched a theatrical retelling of that story with my dad. And that has really sunk in. I've studied the event. And those words echo in my mind because he said it in German. Meine Frau, my wife. Meine Kinder, my kids. I did this the one Sunday I spoke at the little church I was in for a while. But that 10 to 1 thing, if we use that ratio and say, okay, 6,000 died, so we're going to kill 60,000. We've killed millions. So the statement I made is we're worse than the Nazis. And in reality, we very much are. The abusive techniques that were used in the Third Reich, as I said, we are the Fourth Reich. The evidence is overwhelming, and this is just another one of those pieces of evidence. That same mindset. We take revenge. We take revenge on things that we started. Because again, the invasion of Afghanistan had nothing to do with 9/11. The invasion of Iraq had nothing to do with 9/11. The weapons of mass destruction that was proclaimed was a known lie. You know, the incubator babies thing was a known lie. I mean, this was fraud. And it's going to continue. We're going to do more and more and more. Because the analogy of what are the two biggest profiting company organizations right now? The military-industrial complex, as Eisenhower called it, that's making trillions of dollars. And the pharmaceutical industry. Again, there were a whole bunch of billionaires, a bunch of people that became billionaires this year. Last 2 years, a whole bunch of the people. We're not talking about two or three. We're talking about like two dozen or more, or 50 maybe. I don't remember. The vast majority of them in the pharmaceutical industry. Why? Because just like we need a war in order to make the military-industrial complex make a lot of money, it doesn't matter if it's based on fact. We do it because those people don't matter to us because they're not like us. So we can kill them and make a lot of money doing it. And if you have the attitude of saying, I want to milk the opportunity of getting people sick and dependent on me. And of course, if I have the eugenics philosophy too, what would I use? Famines, disease, viruses. The whole COVID-19 thing is based on fraud. You know, the common thing you hear today is trust the science. That's a marketing line. Because what they're saying is trust the scientists. There was the, what's his name, Tyson or whatever, who made a statement in some TV program, because that clip's been used over and over again, about when will people trust the scientists. So, I think he said scientists. I don't think he said the science. I think he said scientists. Or listen to the scientists, whatever he said. That's the problem, because scientists are bought. They're bought and paid for. It's obvious. You don't get your funding unless you come up with the right responses. If you point out something based on science, you don't have a job. So you say trust the scientists, which you're meaning trust the authorities. You're not saying trust the scientists. It's a marketing line. It's like the marketing of having a U.S. Marine holding a Afghan baby in his arms. It's marketing. It's deception. It's a lie. One of the things I've done is I've reviewed some of the videos that I've done previously. One of them was called, If You're a Follower of Christ, Live It. The thing we have to remember is there's a difference between being an American. Because from what I understand, as I've studied, because, you know, the way to study is not, let's look at what a U.S. person, what a person in the U.S. says. But listen to the people in foreign lands, what they say, what they say, what they think about the people in the West, whether it's Europe or the United States. And especially within the Muslim community outside of the U.S., they look at the West as a representation of Christianity. They got fooled, didn't they? Because, you know, it is a small percentage of the West that is Christian by claiming it, and Christian from God's perspective is obviously even less. And what do they see? They see the cruelty, the dominant nation that the U.S. does. You know, we don't make things like China does. Now, there are issues with a lot of the practices within China, but they make something. It's economic warfare. What we do is we do currency manipulation and we bomb people. And so, as long as we have stronger arms, we can bomb people. And, well, we make a lot of money and people will kind of fear us, because it's kind of unpleasant to have a bomb go off in your neighborhood or in your house and kill your family. You know, that's more than unpleasant. But, of course, then there's economic manipulation. You know, we had the gold-based currency. It moved to what's called the petrodollar. And it's all based on fiat currency now. So a dollar is worth a dollar because we say it is. It's not because it's based on anything. And it's going to collapse. I mean, that has happened throughout history. It's happening again. So we're built on nothing. And a lot of people have said, especially when we watch what's happened with Afghanistan, we're seeing a turning point of the collapse of the U.S. So many people in Europe are saying, we got to do things to get ourselves away from U.S. You know, you look at the Nord Stream 2, the pipeline between Russia and Germany. What the U.S. tried to do is sanction Germany or the pipeline, saying, no, you shouldn't do that. That's wrong. You shouldn't get gas from your neighboring country or, you know, nearby country. You shouldn't do that. You should buy it from us instead, where we have to ship it to you. A whole lot more expensive. So it's going to cost you more because it's going to be transport. But you know, you shouldn't get it from your neighbors. It's a power thing. I think before the end of the year, Nord Stream 2 is supposed to go live. Because I think they're laying the last couple, you know, down to a few pipes left of this undersea pipeline. And I think that's also one of the symbols of the dependency on the U.S. is shrinking. So my kids grew up where the U.S. was the dominant player. Long before they'll be at my age in their 60s. That won't be true at all. Depending upon the scale you use, China will become or is the dominant economic player. The military, you know, again, there was that the series about the same time, the Chinese military, the Russian military, and the U.S. military produced a recruitment video. Both the Chinese and the Russian showed a bunch of really strong men doing some really serious fighting. The U.S. recruitment video was a frail woman saying, "My mama was a lesbian. I have two mommies, and I'm part of this group." Which one do you fear? This guy who is a Russian, who is 89% muscle, or this gentle lady? And, you know, I do wonder, because if you look at organizations like the CIA, they have the recruitment stuff too. And they're recruiting, again, the homosexual community, transgender community, we want you because of your skin color, not because of what you do, but because you have a certain ethnic background. We want to get the Hispanic community because we're a diverse group. And I think that is part of the demise, because it's becoming more and more of a political entity. You know, when you had people like John F. Kennedy, who said he wanted to break up the CIA to 1,000 pieces or whatever he said, he failed. They won the war. They're going to self-destruct with those kind of things. So we see the U.S. in so many ways self-destructing, economically, militarily, and, you know, we're self-destructing. So with all that on the table, and again, going back to the line, how Christian of you? Well, are you a Christian? Christian not meaning I belong to a club. I belong to the PCA, the Southern Baptist, the Roman Catholic Church, whatnot. No, are you a follower of Christ? Again, my video, if you're a follower of Christ, live it. I want to get to my family. I want to encourage them. All who desire to live a godly life in Christ Jesus will be persecuted. Great marketing line, isn't it? 2 Timothy 3:12. The objective of being willing to go through tribulation, and I'm not talking about the eschatology thing, you know, in this world you will have tribulation, but be of good cheer, I have overcome the world. But you're in this world, you'll have tribulation. Those are Jesus' words. It's not a future time that some will do, maybe. No, in your life, you're going to have tribulation. Are you willing to go through that? To say, yes, I believe Jesus Christ is my creator. Not that he's a pleasant fellow. Not that we have a cross that symbolizes we're part of the club. Not that we have a book that we keep on our shelf. And you can see it if you take away the dust. But we trust him. Again, believe, faith, trust is basically the same word in Greek. Same root. I believe. Don't ask me to pay a price, but I believe. Called you to trust him. Is he true? Is he who he claims to be? And what you will do, you will find people who will say, I'm going to shout louder and say, no, no, because I'm going to make some flippant statement and say, no, no. I'm going to look at somebody else and blame them, say, no, no, no. Or I'm going to turn to the institution and say, look, I'm part of this group. And I'm there, you know, once every 4 weeks on a Sunday morning and sleep to a sermon because it gives me some time to rest, you know, because, you know, I can sleep through that. Because, and of course, there is no call for the sermon in Scripture. What is the call? It's to love. To love by holding that baby. But not as a PR thing. Again, I pointed out that this because I saw him recently, a man in Senegal, doesn't look a bit like me. And in his arm, he had his baby. Who I looked at that child's face, and I saw the contentment in his dad's arms. I used to see that in my kids when they were in my arms. And that's been denied me. Because I'm not in the club anymore. I reject the club. I follow the Lord Jesus Christ. I point out the fallacy of the club. And strive to live those little difficult things. Like the James 1:27 about to visit orphans and widows. That's the duty of the episkopos, the overseer. It's not an office. It's not where you can sit in the back room and have people come to you and say, we're official. We're esteemed by God more than you. So come to us and we will rule over you. Because after all, we're ruling elders. Wait a minute. An elder is somebody who's older. And where does the Lord call man to rule? Oh yeah, that's back at Genesis 1, isn't it? To rule over the animal kingdom, over another man? Not at all. Maybe it's, what's the word? Deception. Like, again, the photo op of a U.S. Marine holding a baby or handing a water bottle. Or that tearful, oh, 13 of our soldiers died when 200 Afghanis died. But we were there to serve. We were there to invade, to destroy, to kill. And we did in large numbers. We're not the honorable military. We're the invaders. We are the invaders. More than an apology is due. Again, as Richard Medhurst said, how Christian of you. My concern is I look at, again, the Afghan orphans who one day will be adults. What should we do? Because a lot of them will say, I want revenge on those who killed my dad. They want revenge against the Americans. It doesn't take that many of them to find ways to take that revenge. Do you think it'll happen? One of the important differences, because again, unlike most Christians and probably a good percentage of the Muslims, I've read the Quran. And one of the things you can see, especially listen to people in the Muslim community, because the vast majority of deaths of Muslims is not from U.S. soldiers. And it may be late, but Muslim against Muslim. The Sunni-Shia thing is literally a killer. and listen to what happens when somebody has members of their family die because of the acts of another Muslim of a different type, is let Allah grant me revenge. It is a common attitude because it's consistent with the Quran. What is the follower of Christ to do? Consider, let's say years from now, it may not take years, somebody in Afghanistan, in Iraq, in Yemen, in Libya, individually, a small group, a large group, find a way to do a modest attack that may kill dozens, or another 9/11 that will kill thousands in the U.S. Is your attitude, I want revenge? Don't claim to be a Christian. Don't claim to be a Christian. You're deceived. You may recall the line, because it said more than once, vengeance is mine, says the Lord. He does not give us at any time, in any case, the right to seek vengeance or to take an act of vengeance. Zero. None. Try Romans 12 on that. And again, many places. The difference, if you're a follower of Christ, is one, follow Christ. Show love. Bless those who persecute you. You may recall those lines. Maybe not. That's a line that's frequently not uttered on a Sunday morning. But not only hear the words, but live them. You will probably find there are going to be a lot of people who want vengeance. Some may take it. The response needs to be, I want to bless you. You may have killed my family. You may have destroyed my community. How can I bless you? Because within the Taliban, within ISIS, within just these Afghan orphans, maybe the elect, and I don't know who they are, but I want to bless them. With those that are not, if I bless them, in a sense, I'm getting revenge because I'm putting coals in their heads, right? But that's not my point. My objective is to bless in the hope that I'm blessing a brother. That's the difference between, let's support our troops, and I'm a follower of Christ. That's the difference between, let's honor those noble men who fought for our freedoms. No, we are the invaders. They didn't fight for our freedoms. They went to kill. If you're a follower of Christ, live it. Compare that to what's happening in our family. The one person, if he was a Muslim, who had all the reason in the world to take revenge, is me. But I'm not a Muslim. I'm not an atheist. I'm not simply in the Christian club. I'm a follower of the Lord Jesus Christ. And the people who have been extremely cruel, and let me emphasize, extremely cruel, including Jim Cross, Render Keynes, and Chris Bitterman, three gentlemen who remain in my constant prayers, my desire is to bless them. Because in that process, maybe, as I use the example over and over again, it's the Galatians versus 2 Peter, we will end up calling each other our beloved brother. course, there's the Kohl's thing too, but that's not my objective. I want to be able to look at one of these men at least, face to face, honestly say, my beloved brother. I want my kids to have the example of a man who says, in spite of what has happened, in spite of the hate shown me, in spite of the fact that I haven't seen my kids in 9 years, in spite of the fact that we have these U.S. soldiers holding kids and given all sorts of praise, you've denied that to me for 9 years. And I want to bless you. I want to show you love. I want to offer you grace because I want to point you to my Lord, the Lord Jesus Christ, the Creator who entered His creation to redeem His elect. And I'm giving you evidence I'm part of the elect. I'm asking you to show evidence that you are. By doing that odd little thing called love. One of the things that it's very conscious of when you read the news and whatnot, you talk about or you know hear what's going on. There's strategic talk. There is military, economic things and whatnot. There is the power politics and all these kind of things. What you rarely hear is how do we love well? What is the thing to do to love well? I want to love well. I want to love Jim Cross, Render Keynes, Chris Bitterman. I want to love my kids. And this may come as no surprise. Beyond question, I want to love my wife. Because, again, my model is the model of Jesus Christ, who stated repeatedly, I will never leave you or forsake you, specifically talking to his elect. And the elect and Christ relationship is mirrored in the relationship between the husband and the wife. This is seen many times, most notably, obviously, the Ephesians 5:25. Husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church, his elect. And again, that's ecclesia, the called out ones. It's not the institution. It's the elect. It's the people. Christ loved his people, not the institution that claims his name. The husband is supposed to love a person, his wife. And I'm committed to one lady and one lady alone, as I've pointed out so often. She has been my one and only and will remain my one and only. I will not seek another. No matter what happens, no matter what she's done, what she will do, if she dies before me, I will not seek another. She's my one and only lady because I love her. Even after 9 years of the isolation, the coldness that she has shown me, I love her, and I will not leave her or forsake her. I want to give you an example of love. I was going to try to keep this to under a half hour. I didn't. I would like to engage. I engage others on more difficult issues. I would like to have the opportunity to engage my own family on difficult issues to prepare them. That's why I keep saying, when I have the opportunity and it continues to come, when I talk with somebody younger, I challenge them. Why do you believe? Well, you know, it's our club. No, I want to strengthen you. That's, you know, again, the Bible is true and the institutional church is a fraud, the video that I did. I try to give you a bunch of foundation why I can trust that Jesus Christ is who he claims to be, my creator, your creator, creator and sustainer. If he were to become non-existence, everything stops. It doesn't go by itself. Everything stops. It's over. He's the only sustainer of everything, whether it's here, whether it's in stars and planets, long distances away. He sustains it all. That's power. If If you're a follower of Christ, live it. Please, I want to open the door to reconciliation. I'm a follower of Christ. I'm not seeking vengeance. I'm seeking reconciliation. And I'm also giving you the warning to say no is a definite factor saying that I'm going to spit in the face of God, what you're doing. It's really obvious. The evidence is set before you. And if you're showing a cold heart to me, someone who's made it very clear, and you say, no, I won't talk to you, one day you will stand before the Lord and say, thank you, Lord, I was part of this club. And you may be hearing the words, scary words, depart from me. I never knew you. Or you could show evidence now. I trust him. I'm not going to seek vengeance. I am going to do what he stepped into the world and went to the cross for. Reconciliation. That's set before you. I try to make it clear. I try to make it serious. It's not a game. Love is not a game. Do you love? If you're a follower of Christ, live it.